it's the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple news, a week after a keynote, which is normally a bit of a down, a bit of a slump. So the rumours are up. They're already talking Apple Watch 2, which I've got to say, we're going to pass on this week because it's a bit of a yawn fest and it's a little bit too early, really, to start the Apple stuff as far as the watch is concerned. There are a couple of other rumours that are out there and a couple of things that have been taken from the dev releases of Yosemite and Stupid Name OS. joining me to discuss our way through the week's Mac news, absolutely fantastic bunch. Top left, starting us off, it's Lee Peterson. How you doing, man, from the Guitar Show?
Hi, everyone. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Looking forward to the weekend, although I've had a bit of a nightmare with my phone overnight. I did a iCloud backup restore, which took about 24 hours, and it's just fallen on on its backside, so I've just done a refresh from scratch this morning. So, yeah, that was a fun, but other than that, I'm good.
Someone tweeted out last week about their iPhone backup had gone into like its 20th hour or something. Do they think they should have stopped it?
Yeah, it was stuck. Mine was just stuck. Like when you get all the apps, when they're like in that waiting state where you kind of see them loading, they just say loading underneath them. It was pretty much, it loaded like a set of them, maybe 10, 15, and then everything else was just sat there all night. So I just thought, I just canned it and started. But it's, you know, it's fine. It's not the end of the world, but it's... you just realise how many times you enter your username and password in when you update a device again.
Absolutely. Oh, well, it's good. The summer's here as well in the UK.
Yeah, nice day today.
Can't believe that. Next to him, it's Adam. How's it going, buddy? In the broom cupboard.
I'm good. I'm just trying to unstick my video here, but we're good.
Yeah, we're still broadcasting good. Apparently, so it's not too bad. Beneath him, it's Doc. Early hours of the morning in Hawaii, but big of effort as always. How's it going, bud?
Good. Anytime you get to be called after Adam from Narnia, it's always good. So I'm fantastic.
Adam from Narnia, the witch. Oh, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Got you. Yeah, it took me a while. And last but by no means least, the brand new Apple Watch owner on the panel, Chuck Latornis. Talk us through it, dude. Stood in line.
Earned my way back on the panel. Thank you very much for having me and allowing me to come back. I got mine in the store. I got it on the first day that they had in-store sales, which was a very nice experience.
No, excellent, mate. So was there a big queue for first day? Was it kind of like an opening day?
No queue whatsoever. No one even knew that the watches were available in store. I went online.
Including the employees, right?
That it was coming. I made my reservation. I walked in. I said, I'm here to pick up my watch. They said, thank you very much. Help me, you know, put it on and all that kind of stuff. And I was gone. It was the first sale in that store.
Oh, good man. And how are you finding it? You're sort of 4 or 5 days now?
Three or four, yeah. And the first day I didn't really get to try it at all because I was in meetings all day, but I'm getting used to it. I still think the interface is a little opaque, so it takes a lot of hunting around to figure out what you want to do. Not nearly as obvious, you know, where you're going as the iPhone, the iPad, or even the Mac.
It's a new way of interacting, I suppose, yeah.
I do like it better than I thought I was going to, and I'm still more excited about what Watch OS 2 is going to bring. I wrote Macro, that's really the reason that I jumped in now.
There's always a story that I tell people when you talk about making up your mind and designing stuff, where there's a guy who's an architect, and he never designs or landscapes the garden until a year after the building's been used. Mm. And the theory is, you know, that where all the trodden down grass is where you should put the pathways. And I think that's certainly true of the Apple Watch. I think you've got to use it as is out of the box for like a couple of weeks. And then you very quickly realize what you need in your glances and what the order is and where they need to go. And what you don't want really more than anything. I think it kind of... You holistically change your approach into what you make the watch work for you a little bit more if you just sit back rather than throwing in what you think you're going to use and try and force yourself to use it.
Right, yeah. So. The real tricky balance, and I think the thing that was hard for me to get my head around is that it's, you know, obviously not a replacement for your iPhone, but it's, I think, designed to make you use your iPhone less. So you do the things that make it more useful so you can check and see who that email's from and do I need to bother with that now. Tear down the notifications so you're not getting bombarded by Periscope every 10 minutes and things like that.
Yeah.
And then it starts to become really useful because it does call out, kind of let the important things rise to the top.
Now here's an interesting one for you guys to fathom out for me. So the other, I tend to wake up early in the hours of the morning, so 4:30, 5 o'clock, and I'll wander up here to the studio and I'll sit and do a bit of work and then I'll wander back home. And the other morning, I left my phone here at the studio. So I'm going home and I've got the watch on and all I've got is the little red you know, can't find the phone symbol that comes up at the top of your watch. So sure. We're sitting having breakfast and Sharon says, I can't text you anymore. And I said, right, okay, what's the problem? So she gives me a phone. I said, well, you've deleted me as a contact. Any hints here? And so I added myself as a contact and I sent a text message. I said, that'll pling on, but it's gone. It'll pling up on the phone up at home and that's that. There were no messages devices that were enabled in the house. The kids' iPads haven't got it, and my wife's MacBook Air hasn't got it. All of the devices that have got messages on for me were up here at the office, and the message came through on my watch, and the phone wasn't there. And I was a bit spooked, I have to say, because I couldn't figure out how it's managed to do it.
You're not on the same Wi-Fi network, right?
No, completely different Wi-Fi network, because it's 60 meters that way to the house. Right. So right. I have no clue. There's no messages enabled devices in the house with me. There's no other device that's connected to my Wi-Fi that could have done it. And the phone is at a completely different location on a completely different Wi-Fi network. How?
Spooky.
Yeah, see, that's... Yeah. Yeah, so if you're listening to the show now, I want hypotheses as to how this has occurred.
Where did you send the message from?
I sent it from a Windows. With a Mac studio? No, I sent it from a Windows phone, my wife's Lumia, to my iPhone, and my iPhone was up here. So it can't have been an iMessage because she can't send me those. So someone's got something linked up in my house and they're stealing my data. It's the only way I can figure it. And they've already got
it's
me signed
the NSA.
In.
Well, it wouldn't be NSA over there.
Conspiracy theory.
I know, but they let us on, so the NSA are like, all right,
what's
these guys
the British version of the
M6?
NSA?
MI6.
There you go. Yeah. MI6 has got you wired.
Yeah, there's
all the NSA things because we're working with them. We're going to get our feet shut down.
Audrey down at GCHQ looked at it and went, oh, Ewan's going to want to see that. I'll send it to his watch. Bling.
Ewan has two traps in the other room.
I quickly get used to wearing the watch because with my restores going on this morning, I couldn't use my watch because it wouldn't sync. I originally put iOS 9 on it to test some stuff, and then it went a bit pear-shaped. So I put my I tried to sync my watch up with it, and it wouldn't work. So I did my morning walk without my watch, and I really missed it. It's the first time I hadn't worn it since it came out. Just little things like the fitness app I couldn't use. You know, no more time, no distance, all that kind of stuff. It's amazing how quick I've got used to using it.
Yeah, no, the first thing I do is reach over, pick it up, put it on, bang. That's the end of the day.
It's so funny when you get out of bed, I swear I grabbed that quicker than I grabbed my iPhone now. And I went to go grab coffee the other day. I was in the office. I was lasering away. I had like 1,000 bottle order for this corporate thing. And then I went to the Bucks and I forgot my watch. I got about halfway down the hallway and I realized I didn't have the watch on. And so all the messages and everything were dying. Of course, that's the Starbucks trip where you meet somebody that you haven't seen in a minute, so you're catching up. So for about 45 minutes, I'm out of the office, and I'm looking at my watch. It has the red dot, and I'm, like, feeling apprehensive, like I'm missing something. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm getting text messages or Slack notifications from Patrice.
No, I was so spooked I didn't think about this, but what would have been interesting if I'd hit reply and I'd have voiced a message back to Sharon and seen whether it sent it or not. That would have been interesting.
I'm with Chuck, though, you know, just to close this out, that, you know, basically the watch for me has become the filter for all the stuff that I can ignore. It's almost more about the stuff, and I've told people this, it's almost more about the stuff that it's allowing me to not, you know, manage than the stuff that it is.
Okay. Yeah.
That's I don't know if that makes
profound.
Any sense, but...
It makes more sense than in anything anyone's ever said. Honestly, it's very profound because it definitely does do that for you.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't pull my phone out anywhere near as much anymore. And 5-minute timer for tea is number one on my glances.
Stop
the moving around bit. Timer for tea. There we go. It's perfect. Do you fancy a quick tour of the studio? Because we've got an awful lot done. The web studio in here is finished. And I did a little quick one last night on the big show. But I'll just take a couple of seconds to show you just how far we've got. What's different in here now is the fact that we have got green screen lighting up, which is now working as well. And all of the other lighting has got diffusers on it that you can see there with that lovely ripple on it. There's no stands anymore either. So the stands are all gone off the lighting and off the camera. They're all put away and the monitor speakers are all up and working superbly. And there's lighting for my for my rear side as well that's up in here. And we've got noise baffles up everywhere, which are really working well. They're just on every wall so that you can, and there's even one on the ceiling in the alcove there, just to stop it from reflecting the noise. And it's working brilliantly. In the other room here, we've got Jack and Paul, who are manfully trying to get the studio backdrop up so that we can start using that as a photographic studio. And once that's done, everything is absolutely finished, in effect. So, what was that?
Nothing manfully, we've done it.
They've done it, nothing nearly. So that's also absolutely awesome.
He has my haircut.
He has your haircut, Doc, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a trendsetter.
Paul with pink hair.
Did you construct those baffling panels yourself?
I did. Yes, they're made out of half inch by one inch.
Cool.
And then
square frames covered with fabric.
Covered with material. Yeah.
There's Chuck on a little screen down there.
There's Chuck. Yeah. There's Chuck. Line four. There he is.
Yeah, they're working. They're working awesome.
Yeah,
that sounds a lot different in there.
Loads less echo. And the other thing that's taken a complete change is the wall of shame.
Here I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, yes. No, but
I think
it's
somewhere.
Huge now. There you go. So now everyone's got theirs up, apart from I've got three here that need to go up, and I'm waiting for a fourth to just come back. But I can't, my OCD won't let me put three up when I need four, because it'd be uneven then. But there's Sam and Chiz from the Gaming Show. If you want to see the E3 roundup, then tune in on my microphone's playing up. There we go. I'm back. Tune into the Gamer Show on Monday night at 8 p.m. and Sam and Chiz and Paul will take you through all the stuff from the E3 event. There's Don McAllister, and if there's one of the characters that's on here that is absolutely the person,
love that.
It's Don McAllister. That is him.
That's incredible.
Well, him and Shad.
Yeah.
Shad looks exactly like Shad.
There's Gazmaz, who left this morning for the Mac Midwest Barbecue. So if you go to that, and also for Mac Stock. So go and have a join on with him and a couple of beers as well. And then the other one that's absolutely like the person is this one here. Any ideas?
Yeah.
Well, Shadwell.
There's no question that's Shadwell. Absolutely.
Excellent.
And there's Lee's, our guitar man, straight off. So there you go. That's it. There's Steve Noble, chairman of the London Mac User Group. He's on it as well. And there's Len Peralta, the guy that draws them, the absolute genius that put all these together. And there's Muller as well. Yeah, he's done. That is absolutely him. No question. If you'd like to get on the BTN Wall of Shame, here it is, then all you got to do is send us an email to btncaricatures@gmail.com and you will be sent the instructions about how to get Len to do your caricature. And then you too will be on the Wall of Shame with everyone, including people like Greeny, Tom Merritt. There we go. Andy and Atco. They're all on here, mate. All on here. So that's it. That's the studio. And it's nearly done. It's nearly done. There's just a bit of cable management's got to go in here a little bit more yet before we can start using it commercially. And then once the backdrop's done, the studio's ready to go as far as shooting's concerned. So we're up and running. I couldn't get over it, mate. Absolutely.
Congratulations. Awesome.
Looks great.
No, it's great. I've got to say, there's a huge thank you. I mean, people like Lee came up on the day we moved in, and Steve came up. Jeff, my neighbour from downstairs, has been up a few times doing a few odd jobs and things like that. Jack's been brilliant, and Paul's come up. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without plenty of help from plenty of people. So thanks to everyone who's dived in. Well worth it. The week in Apple. What's gone on? I thought about this one as an interesting story, but I don't know if it's kind of a non-event, really. There's an awful lot of suggestions, if you look at the developer release for El Capitan, that trim support is returning for third-party SSDs. And I was kind of really excited by that as a story, but then I sat and thought about it and thought, does it really matter?
I had the exact same thought, Ewan, because I've been running an SSD, and I think it's one from Crucial. They have all got like onboard stuff that basically does that in, I think, the firmware, or a lot of the drives that I buy, maybe not all of them, but you know, there's that debate. But I didn't throw it on when trim enabler wasn't really well supported in Mavericks, I don't think. there were some kind of big gotchas. So I never enabled it, and I don't know that I've needed it. I haven't really noticed speed performance issues with mine, but maybe it hasn't been long enough. I don't know.
Yeah, I had mine on for the longest time, and then I went through this really, really detailed article on the Nantech, maybe right before he announced he was going to like slow down on the Nantech writing. And after reading that article, I came to the conclusion that it was pretty much unnecessary. But prior to that, like, I was, you know, living by it. And again, one of my most popular YouTube tutorials is about switching to SSD. And again, to this date, one of the most common questions I get is about lack of trim support. And yeah, I'm with you, Adam. I really don't think you need it anymore. And if you're buying OWC or Crucial or some of these other drives, it's kind of sort of already built in. And theoretically, Yosemite and above takes care of that on its own. So it could be just one of those things they're giving back because people whine, but it may not really matter.
Yeah, I don't know that it matters at all, but it was interesting that they've allowed it. That's all. It's just,
yeah.
I mean, Apple's never one to give in to kind of public pressure, is it, on that kind of stuff? If they say you really don't need it and it doesn't help.
That's a whole nother conversation, because I think, you know, under Tim Cook, there's a lot of changes, and I think we're seeing them react either more quickly. I think they always listen to public opinion. And I don't know if maybe it's just this new schedule with how they're releasing stuff or what, but I mean, they do seem to be responding either more quickly or more often. I'm still trying to analyze that, but to sort of public opinion stuff. Like, you look at how quickly they acted on Discovery D,
right?
You know, when everybody was complaining about that, they just took it out. So, you know, I don't think we've seen that before. And I don't know if that's just the new leadership or just because they're, you know, they have this new schedule of sort of doing quicker updates.
It does feel like it's happening more often to me, but I think they're doing it quietly. So that kind of, you know, saves them face that way. They don't lose the reputation that they always had. They just kind of, all right, it's just not there anymore.
Yeah, no, interesting. Muller in the chat room says it'd be nice to have trim back because then you wouldn't have to buy an app. But as far as I understand it, mate, your app doesn't work. So even if you've got the third-party trim app under Yosemite, it won't function. So makes no
I've
difference.
Never needed to do it. I've felt the need to kind of look. And I'm kind of did a lot of reading, like Doc said, you know, with this. I just didn't feel it was necessary. I've never run it.
Trim is not necessary for most users, says Muller, but if you're most aware of the power that you're using, you may consider it. A helpful article video can be found here that explains a little better. Please let us know if you have any other questions or concerns. So that's something he got back from DBXHI. So interesting. Just a quick thought. One of the other things that came up as well, which I thought was a quick and easy story to deal with, and may end up being, I don't know, again, this sounded a bit weird. Apple revokes Monsters made for iPhone license, so they've taken it away from their earphones and their lightning-based stuff. They said it's after a lawsuit, but I'm just wondering whether the agreement's come to end and there's issues, whether they can't renew it or not, or whether this really is a bit of tit-for-tat.
Everyone likes to call them out for that. Everyone always likes to call them out for that. A company of that size really doesn't have to get into such things. So why would they create problems for themselves? Yeah. And I'm always amazed at how many people that say crazy stuff like, Apple's just doing this so they can make more money. Every company is doing what they're doing to make more money. Like, otherwise you don't have a job. Like, I don't know. It's just really, really kind of weird. And I don't think that they have time to bother with sort of tit for tat information, like you said. And I do believe
that too big to be that joined up.
Yeah, I think that the licensing agreement has probably come to an end, and there's just something that needs to be taken care of in order to gain it back. And if they have the opportunity to work themselves back into MFI, they will. They won't get, you know, cock-blocked for any reason. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time Apple vindictively took action against a vendor because they did something they didn't like. Right? I mean, way back in the day, one of the graphics card companies, I forget which one it was, NVIDIA or ATI, let it slip that they were the graphic card of choice for the yet to be announced new Macintosh. And once they did that, Apple switched immediately to the other vendor.
That's Jobs, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was Jobs.
But, you know, I think that's it's still somewhat a pervasive attitude in Apple. It's, you know, Tim Cook hasn't turned things around to all sunshine and unicorns quite yet. But that said, you know, Apple and Samsung have had how many lawsuits against each other, and Samsung is still the supplier for chips for most of the mobile devices.
You know,
you do what's right for the business.
Yeah.
But with surely having with obviously Monster made Beats previously, didn't they? And certainly from, you know, people I know within kind of, you know, more kind of guitar and music professionals don't really rate Monster that highly.
No.
I don't know if, I mean, the first thing I saw when I read it was I thought, yeah, Apple of old probably would have done that out of spite, but I'm under Tim Cook. I'm not convinced they would have do that now, but who knows? I mean, it's a big organization, lots of different people. So he hasn't got control of everything when it comes down to it, is he, to that detail? So
yeah, I'm with you, Ewan. I, you know, this is one of those ones that I'm given a couple weeks to try and see if the real story comes out. You know, because we've seen this happen so many times before, and then classically, what it turns out to be is, you know, somebody forgot to, you know, renew the license agreement or get on top of it, and there's just a delay of a couple weeks. You know, Monster's alleging that this is something Apple did vindictively, but I'm going to guess that we're going to find out that, you know, maybe it's something as like one of Beats' suppliers was found to be not in compliance with Apple's, you know, human rights stuff. That sort of thing can cause, you know, a license like this to not be renewed. It is part of their thing, and who knows where they're manufacturing this stuff and things like that. So it's probably going to come out that something like that happened. You know, I'm just purely speculating, but it usually does. And my guess is they'll have their license back in the next week or two.
Yeah. No.
And again, to reiterate sort of what Lee said, you know, part of the big switch from Monster to Beats anyway was partially due to their quality, and they weren't keeping up to what even Dre liked. And when they started catching a bad rap for just crappy construction and not really following the manufacturing standard and stuff like that, that was one of the things that got them in hot water with Dre, among other things. And eventually they split. So if your stuff's always getting returned because people don't like it, maybe just Apple doesn't want to, you know, attack that to their name. But I mean, there are some stuff out there that still has MFI that's pretty rubbish. But I think that, you know, for the most part, it's kind of a non-starter because to some extent, Monster Cable is basically known as pretty much useless. Monoprice would just outdo Monster Cable in most cases.
And it's the overpriced.
I was just going to say, the other thing that got buried in this story is their existing MFI certified stuff can be sold through September. So they kind of have some time to like get this fixed up too.
Yeah, that's okay. We'd hope so. I mean, like I say, I didn't see it as something that was that joined up or that troublesome to them. It was just, we wouldn't be tied to a lawsuit.
We haven't heard the whole story here. You know, this is just, I think, Monster making some headlines, you know, to get some marketing value out of it.
Yeah, no, it's turning it down into like Dallas, isn't it? It's a Dallas level of script.
That'll go well. Chuck's so right. I mean, it's really the wrong way for them to handle it. You know, whatever's going on, there's a real story under here, and I'm looking forward to when we get to hear that.
Publishers are getting upset, and I've got to think that they're a bunch of churlish wankers, myself, to be honest. Excuse me to put the fine point on it. We didn't really talk much about NewsApp when we did the coverage of the keynote, but of course NewsApp was one of the big things that came out where it was kind of more Flipboard-esque. And apparently a few of the publishers are a bit pissed off that Apple's automatically, if they've got hold of your RSS feed, they've automatically put you straight into the NewsApp on iOS 9, and you have to write to say, please take me out if you don't want it in. And I thought there's a bit of a parallel here because there's an awful lot of website that have got podcast directories that come on. And I got an email the other day saying, oh, you need to claim the Rage podcast. Well, we haven't done a Rage podcast in about 3 years. So I don't think I'm going to. But I don't need to claim it because it's mine, mates. You're just publishing my RSS feed. But okay, some of them are getting advertising off those pages. But when it comes down to it, it's another outlet for people to watch my show, and I should just leave it alone and that's be done with it. And we had a conversation a few weeks ago, Adam, about the other podcast directory doing the same thing. Surely this is the same right. stuff. You know, you want people to read your stuff, then let them read your stuff. Advertising money's fair enough, but, you know, that might be the rubber. If you're BBC, then maybe your advertising revenue is something a bit different, but.
Do you have to opt in to Flipboard?
If you don't want
you have to opt into Flipboard. Yeah, you need to go through an approval process. You have to be an official partner for Flipboard, I think.
So the hot news is that Lee's blog has been accepted by Apple into the news process. So well done.
It is. Yeah, it's in there, and to be honest, all I had was a few emails. I submitted the RSS feed because I've not gotten into the Apple publisher stuff isn't available yet. So I submitted the RSS feed. They said they were reviewing it. A few days later, I got an email saying we're still reviewing. Then yesterday I got one saying it's been accepted. But I can't test it yet because the news app isn't available. But it's there when the news app gets released. I think even if you've got iOS 9, the beta's news app isn't in there yet. It's something that they'll submit separately. But yeah, I'm really chuffed about that. Just looking forward to giving it a go. But I mean, someone who's a small blogger, really, to be honest, I'm happy I'm in there and I want to get my content out to as many people that I can. I do have subscribers to my newsletter and I do get obviously view counts and everything else, but I just want to be everywhere I can. I can maybe some of the bigger publishers are getting a bit funny about it, maybe because of their advertising models, I'm not sure, but it's a hard one to try and figure out for me.
Yeah, I just think if you got your content, as Chuck says there, you know, once you generate an RSS feed, you kind of lose control of what you're pushing out there. So, you know, if you don't want it to be out there, don't make an RSS feed.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of the point of why you put an RSS feed out there. The other side of it, though, and the part that I think there is some room for criticism on Apple's part is there was an article, and I'll try to look for it, and maybe you guys know where it is, about a small blogger who got this opt-out notice, and which is, I think, it's fine. Again, if you put an RSS feed, you're putting it out there for people to use. But the other end of it was that Apple was putting all sorts of terms and conditions on this person while they were taking his feed without even bothering to ask him. The things like, you know, you assume liability for anything that's wrong in your feed. You assert that you have the right to publish all your content, and it was a whole litany of legalese that Apple was sort of asserting onto this person when he did nothing. He didn't tell you to go out. He didn't ask to be included. Apple just said, we're taking it. And by the way, you're responsible for all this other stuff. And I think that was just badly handled. They let the wrong lawyers, act.
The ones that dealt with the lawsuit with Monster Cables, those guys did it.
Yeah, maybe.
No, I mean, Chuck's sort of right on this part of the thing. So the deal is that if you don't opt out, you automatically agree to Apple's terms of service. And I haven't even, you know, personally read these terms of service. I need to do it. But, you know, I'm assuming there's things in there like, you know, especially if there's a clause in there that says, you know, they can put ads on my stuff and then make money off of it. I might have a problem with that. You know, it's one thing to use an RSS feed just to redistribute the content. It's another thing to take my content and then use that to generate revenue that you're not going to share with anybody. And if you automatically opt people in by not opting them out to your terms of service, I don't even know how that could stand up legally. Like, I mean, if you were throwing your RSS feed out there and Apple picked it up and you didn't even know, you know, are they proactively sending emails to everybody to say you need to opt out? Whose RSS feed they pick up? I guess maybe. And I don't know. It's just weird how they're handling it.
Well, they're not doing anything different, though, from those websites that are already, and I'm saying the word stealing in inverted commas, stealing podcasts. Because, you know, they take the RSS feed, which is freely available. They put it on their own site and say, here, you can listen to this show. And if you want to claim that show and say, take it down, they will take it down. There's a bit of a weird thing where you have to say take it down twice and you can't take more than one podcast down per day. And it's like, well, hang on, they're all mine, mate. So I can do what I like with them. But by the time you've argued about it, if you'd taken one down per day, you'd have got rid of all them anyway. So it's you know, there's a recourse available to you if you want. But
you shouldn't have to. I think it's fine for anybody to take your RSS feed and publish it. That's what it's for. But the other part of that opt-out notice was things like you confirm that you have all necessary rights to publish your content, you allow Apple to use it for news, you will be responsible for any payments that might be due to any contributors or any of the third parties. And it's very, very heavy-handed. Like Adam said, I don't see how that could stand up in court. I think it was just ambitious or overzealous lawyers who just felt the need to fill the page with legalese. I don't see how you can make that an opt. You can't make somebody agree to something on an opt-out basis. Contracts don't work that way.
No, but they're not. It's not a contract, absolutely. But the interesting thing is though that the
but it implies that it is, and that's the problem.
Yeah, no. If you look at iTunes as an example, podcasts in iTunes, they are bound to hold a set of standards that Apple impose upon you for cleanliness and that kind of stuff. If you have that tag with it, and if you transgress that, then and they get a complaint, they're not banning your podcast; they're just removing it from the directory. And there's a complete difference there. They're not interested in DMCA. They don't give a toss about a DMCA takedown notice and that kind of stuff because they're not taking down the content. They're just taking down the listing in the directory. The actual content is your server. That's where the DMCA stuff's got to go. So
right, but Apple is not going to include your iTunes pod. Is not going to include your podcast in its iTunes directory unless you ask them to, right?
Yeah, no, that's the only opposition.
And that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Just on the monetization. Just Adam, just something you were just talking about a second ago. The way my understanding is that if you're not serving your own ads, so if you're sorting that out as a big publisher, you get 100% of the revenue from the ads. If you're someone like myself that may have an iAd on there, which is a platform that they're using, I would get 70% of the revenue for any ads.
Yeah, but they do say they are going to place advertising next to or near your content without compensation to you. So if you want to make money off your own ads, you're going to have to put it inside your content. And for a lot of, I think, RSS-based content, especially blog text-based stuff, that means you're not getting any revenue for the eyeballs that Apple is delivering you. Because they're just going to rip the content in, right?
There's one way to look at this, though, and I think Ewan kind of touched on this quickly. If you currently get, let's just say you currently get, say, 10,000 views a month, and then all of a sudden you get put on a billion plus possibilities and you're not getting paid any revenue at first. But once you get out there and people realize you're a legitimate guy and you are a contributor to Loop magazine and you make this blog about this stick with like six strings on it and all of a sudden you're being asked to be on Jimmy Fallon, you're going to be happy. So like discovery is what turns Fiona Apple from singing in her garage to Fiona Apple. So you don't get discovery without giving up this quote unquote, I need to make a dime every 2 seconds. The real people who've ever made it will always tell you they hustled in the dark forever. And then one day they tripped over a light switch. So I think there's a positive in it if you're willing to let it go and stop assuming that Apple is only out to, or anybody for that matter, let's just not pick on Apple, is out to just rape you for all your cash. Maybe you're still a nobody. And I get the big channels being whiffy about it, but as a little guy, Discovery is your friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless I mean, this is what Ewan was saying earlier in the conversation that we had. In my opinion, any place that I can get my content out there and get more people listening to it and discovering it is, for me, a good thing. But not everybody's going to see it that way,
right? Well, I've been a freelancer for a long time too, and the old saw is that exposure doesn't pay the bills. So discovery is great, but you do need to find a way to monetize your own work and get compensation for your own work as well. Maybe putting ads in your RSS feed is the answer. Maybe using news as a stepping stone and promoting yourself so that you can get outside that ecosystem is it? Because not everybody's going to get on Jimmy Fallon.
But a dream's not a job.
Yes.
True.
I mean, that's the thing is, you look at doing BTN. I did this because I enjoyed having a conversation with my mate and it turned into a podcast. And then the podcast kind of snowballed a bit after Amber MacArthur made his podcast of the week on Net at Night. And it just got out of hand. And here I am. But I mean, it doesn't pay the bills, not by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, everyone that's involved with BTN, the one thing, the total goal is it would be great if BTN just picked up the bill for Fridays on my day rate, and that would be enough. That's crying, thank you. But it doesn't, and I'm not going to stop doing it because I've got business through it. I've got customers because I podcast. So it's not, I didn't, yeah, I drink.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and, you know, I'm in the place where the podcast is covering a lot of bills now, a lot more than it was 10 years ago. But, I mean, it took 10 years to get here, and I'm still not 100% there, and maybe it'll be there someday. But I also do, you know, I'm self-employed, and I do freelancing and stuff like that. And everybody I know who's doing that sort of work now, more and more, and I think this is just how, you know, the world is going to work for people who are self-employed or doing their own thing, is it's about multiple streams of revenue. So I do a little web development, I do a little consulting, I do a little this and that, and aggregate, you know, then I'm doing the stuff that I love, and it is paying the bills. And I think you're in a similar situation, Yuan. So I think that's the new norm for a lot of people as we move to more services-based sort of things and away from this sort of production. You know, you're not going to be at one job doing one thing for 20 years anymore and then collecting your pension and retiring.
Yeah.
You're going to be hustling your whole life doing a lot of different little things.
I think,
and it's going to work in aggregate.
I sat down with a guy many years ago, and he said, if you stop promoting yourself, you stop earning money. And I was like, yeah, okay, I get that. And he's like, no, you promote yourself in that direction over there, and you talk to all those people, and then a buck comes in, but it doesn't come from that direction. It comes from over there.
Right.
But if you stop talking that way, the buck stops coming in this direction as well. And you can't ever tie the two together. and he said, you'll live your life like that. You promote yourself, you promote yourself, you promote yourself. And all the promotion that you do doesn't generate you any direct work. But if you stop promoting, the work stops. And there's no tangible between the two. And I've always worked on that principle. And it's never been truer than in my case. I sit and talk and talk and talk and do British Tech Network, and work comes in. And I do fine. Thank you very much.
Can I tell you guys a really, really quick story? A few years back, I was at this conference in California, and I was having a hard time sleeping. I get the insomnia every once in a while. So I rolled out to the bar, and I said, I'm just going to sit in a bar and have a vodka or something, and maybe that'll help me out. So I'm sitting down. I met this guy, an older gentleman, really cool. We were talking story. And he was like, so what are you into? And I'm like, yeah, I do some writing for AOL, and I do some podcasting here and there. And he's like, yeah, I've heard about this podcasting thing. It's something that I'm thinking about getting into. And he had said to me, if there was anything that you could have, what would it be? And I go, you know, when I grew up, I always wanted to be a millionaire. It turns out that that's not going to get you very far. So I would love to meet a billionaire that I could just have as a mentor and put in my phone, and I can call him up when I have business questions and kind of be able to talk story, you know, with him every once in a while. And so we're going on and on with a couple of drinks into it later, and he gives me his card, and he goes, you're a nerd guy. Look it up on the internet. I'll probably see you in the bar tomorrow. And I was like, cool. Turns out he's a multi-billionaire that owns a company that does collections for VisaNet. And he sold his company to Visa for some $5 billion a couple of years ago. And I still, to this very day, I have his number and I can call him. But the one thing he told me, he goes, how you become really, really good is you need to be seen as an expert. How I became good at this is I went from a guy who was getting hassled by bill collectors, and I thought they were such a-holes, and I didn't think that was right. So he had just come from having his partner steal all of his money in an oil company that he owned. And so when all these mortgage guys and stuff started calling him about his ranch and this and that, they were being so rude to him on the phone. And he just thought that wasn't the way to be. So he started this company that would call people and talk to them. Well, I understand you're having some problems. Let's work out a plan and let's be nice. So that newer style of bill collecting is something that he basically invented and helped get the FTC laws and all of that passed. But long story short, his most important thing was, if you can be seen as one of the experts in your field, Adam Christensen, maybe the arguably the first or second oldest.
Have you listened to his podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's funny. But you know what I'm saying? That puts you in this realm that allows you to obtain other business because everybody thinks you're the go-to guy. Everybody thinks you're the expert. And to this day, I mean, no claim on my own self. Anything major happens in the Apple world or the tech world, every news station in town calls me and asks me for my opinion. That gets me all of the business when it comes to my freelancing and my web work and some of my video work and all of that. Most of it comes from, hey, I saw you on the news the other day. It sounds like you know what you're doing. We're having some security issues with our stuff. Can you come and take a look? And I go to the office and it's like a 1,000 person office.
Yeah.
You know, and so Bill Bartman was the guy's name. And to this very day, I can still call Bill Bartman and ask him any question I have about business. And it was the most amazing thing. And I know the average person, every time I tell this story, they go, did you ask him for money? I'm like, hell no. That would have been the dumbest thing you could do. But yeah, it's just pretty powerful stuff there.
Adam, chat room mate, you've pulled. Philip says you're the man.
Yeah, I know. And this is very nice. I was just saying thanks. Actually, I'm typing it right before you said that. No, I mean, it's something, you know, but to be honest, it's something I worked very hard at. And it's interesting, Doc, that you said that, because sort of when I started this thing up, I was just doing it for fun. And when I realized it was something that I really wanted to do, that was sort of the goal, was, you know, I got to let people know. I had already been doing this, you know, for 15 years before that. I was, you know, president of on the board of the Mac User Group in Portland, on the board of the Mac User Group in San Diego. I mean, you know, I was giving this kind of stuff to people, just a smaller group of people, for years. And I was often the go-to guy in those groups. So, you know, it's like, I need to just upscale. This was sort of the plan, and it worked out. But I mean, through a lot of hard work and years of slugging it out, just like you said, you know, slugging it out in the dark, and then, you know, you hit the light switch and things take off, and they just grow from there, and you keep doing it and you do a little more. So, you know, bringing this back to the Apple thing, you know, if this is going to get some people more exposure and allow them to go down that path, I think it's ultimately a good thing.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well is on the back of that is that people don't look at how much work goes into what you do. And what we do as well, in the same, you know, there's 12 to 15 hours of editing and posting that goes on for all the shows to go up on this network.
If you're doing your job right, they won't know. I mean, that's the key, right? If we're doing this really well, people will think it's super easy.
Yeah, and I mean, there's four people that work behind the scenes, booking you guys, maintaining the website, coming up with new ideas to expose us and move us forward. On top of all the stuff that happens just in that front end. And it's like, you get a lot of emails as well that I get emails that's, you know, take the piss out of me or worse, about just kind of Rolls Royce-ing up and just saying, oh, I can edit, don't worry. But this lack of editing is very well thought out, I'll have you know.
I love the guys that get that, and you appreciate this more than anything else. I love the guys that get a DSLR and a tripod and assume that they can all of a sudden become photographer or videographer until they get their first kind of big gig and they find out what a humongous pain in the butt it is.
Work for me.
Yeah.
You can, but it takes 10 years.
Yeah, it did. I did.
That's the thing. You know, it's not, people think it's going to happen overnight. It's not. It's going to take years.
You and what was your apprenticeship?
Freelancing, right? It's not the 2 hours that it takes you to do the job. It's the 15 years it took to learn how to do that kind of job in 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah. I've got to admit, my apprenticeship was dating leg models for Pretty Polly for about 4 years. So I'm not gonna sell a sob story at this point, I'm afraid.
We should get to some Mac news.
Yeah, maybe.
There's exposure and there's exposure.
iOS 9 code suggests that there's a 12.93-inch iPad Pro. It's 2,732 pixels by 2,048 pixels at a resolution of 265 DPI. I mean, have they put that in just to wind everyone up into the iOS 9 code, just to piss everyone off? Because they can put screen resolutions into their heart's content, can't they? But that is right on the Retina line, isn't it, for that size?
I would want to say yeah, and I always want to poo-poo these early rumors, but as my vision gets progressively worse, I'm like, got my fingers crossed on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they put it in to just wind everyone up, but or is it whether it's there as a place. So there was an interesting story this week as well, that in 2013, Apple were playing with 4K content. And I go back to 2013, and our contact in Apple was feeding out stories to us, telling us, there's a 4K TV, there's a 4K TV, we're doing content for 4K TVs. And everyone's like, yeah, okay. And I remember Carl Swagger had a $20 bet with Greeny and with Andy Anatka that there'd be a 4K TV that year, and lo and behold, of course, there still isn't. But it kind of just, Carl, if you're watching, mate, it reinforces that you were probably right, there was a 4K TV, it just didn't make the market. And I just don't know whether they put stuff in the code that allows them to do that testing back on the campus without getting too freaky about it. And it's kind of got out, and it's just
I think once it gets in the code that gets released to anybody, even the developers, it's a real thing. I think if they were just playing,
so you really
it
think
stays
this is
in the cement room with the triple locks.
Okay, so you think this is a definite then? We're getting iPad Pro in probably September, October?
I don't see why not, yeah. I mean, I'm not a real rumor guy, but yes, I would say that points to it.
The original dates that we agreed were July, so...
Especially with the multitasking in iOS 9, you could just see that's going to be amazing.
Yeah, good point.
The thing I'm not convinced about is this whole force touch thing, whether that's going to be in there or not. I'm not convinced they're going to be able to do it on that size screen, but...
I don't think they can do force touch on a screen, though. That's the trouble, because you could see maybe doing it on a pad that's on the screen, or a section of the screen, perhaps, or maybe a touch pad to the side. But to get the whole screen to react that way might be cool. Well, it doesn't actually move, of course, so there's the other thought. It's only triggering a vibrating engine, isn't it? So.
There's also a product cycle thing to this. There's a business side to this sort of thing too. The iPad being a mature product now, and something that Apple is going to need to do some large change to every couple of years just to kind of juice the sales. You know, it's not going to be back where it was when Apple first introduced the iPad, but you know, this is the next iteration of iPad that is going to make people who already own one possibly go out and buy a new one. So. The timing is right too, just from a business standpoint, for them to do a new iPad product in a new form factor that is going to help, you know, pull along sales.
Here's another thought. If you go back to the old Jobs thing, where, you know, he came back after the white goods era with Scully, you know, that carving the board up into four and saying, we do this, we do this, we do this, we do this, and that's all we're going to do. In terms of Apple's ethic, there's an awful lot of stuff that's coming on, and there's nothing really has dropped off the back end in terms of numbers of products. Is there a danger of
the iPod?
Is that completely dropped off yet, though?
Mostly.
Might as well have been. It's still out there if you want to buy one.
But they're still manufacturing and selling, so it's not dropped off, is my point. And that's the point, is that there's, you know, the amount of products that have come on and the diversity of products that have come on, it's got a long way away from that quadrantry board saying, let's make four products and let's do them well. And that's where the stretching and the going too thin and people coming out. I've still got buggy issues with my watch since the upgrade to the second OS. You know, does it really, do we need it? Yeah, great. Someone will go, yeah, I'll definitely have it. I'll definitely use it. But what's dropping off the other end that's keeping it to a manageable set of products that Apple can keep their finger on the pulse the whole time? And you're all going to go, okay, iOS 9 and OS 10 are the unifiers in that. It's boxes that run those two codes, and that's the key thing. But you've got more variance in hardware that causes more problems with the OS that then causes more problems with the hardware back again. So...
You're going to make me pull out my Sony card that everybody, you know, poo-pooed me on. You know, I said this probably 7-8 years ago. This has always been a concern for me, is that Apple's going to have the Sony from the 80s problem, where Sony was the company, and then they started getting into a little bit of everything and sort of lost it. And so I always have that in the back of my mind. Is Apple going too thin? I don't think they are right now. I think a lot of people are premature still on that, and I think they can maybe still manage it. So I don't know. Each product line is sort of, you know, trimmed down, and I think they've got different teams of people on that, and they're growing the company in terms of employees and locations and stuff like that. So I think they're managing that a little bit better than most. So it seems like they got their hands in maybe too many things, but, you know, look at how much they've staffed up too. So I think they're managing it. It's not a huge problem, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree with Adam. And I think that they're still a four quadrant company. They just redefined the quadrants, right? So now they're a computer, iPhone, iPad, and watch company. And within those things, you know, there's differentiation, but I think the public is seeing those as categories. And when you view it that way, it still makes sense. It's still manageable, and it's a different world than it was back then. Apple's certainly a different company with a different tolerance for resources than it was back then, when all they could handle was a desktop, a laptop,
those quadrants had consistent components before, whereas now the diversity of components within the quadrant is significantly greater.
The quadrant that concerns me is the media and services quadrant that no one talks about, and that's where I think most of their issues and most of the spread too thin lies, you know, and news is just another new piece of that. So, you know, and I, you know, encompassing that, I'm talking about iTunes, I'm talking about iCloud services, I'm talking about music services, I'm talking about, you know, this new news service and stuff like that. That's where I see Apple having the most struggle, but that's also the newest part of the business. in terms of all this stuff. I mean, they've been a hardware company for years, and so they know how to do that. They've been a OS software company for years. They kind of know how to manage that. The other quadrant is their own internal software, you know, and a lot of people, you could argue they're being spread too thin too. If you look at, Final Cut and iPhotos and all of that stuff.
I think the other thing as well that's quite interesting is you look at, you know, you say what products have to drop off to maintain it, and it'd be good to watch the sales trends and graphs and stuff that Apple's got, but actually the products that they've got that are failing in inverted commas, you know, I always think back to Samsung. Samsung looked at their compact camera market and they sold 500,000 of one brand of camera, and they were popping champagne corks left, right and center, and Apple would can the line at 500,000. It would, you know, it would... Apple Watch sold 2.8 million units, according to the US. And the sports band, which costs you $40, actually has a manufacturing cost of $2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't a surprise.
That's a surprise.
$2, they couldn't have let me buy a silver sport with a black band. Come on.
No. But
well, see, you got to, let's add back in the research and development, though. At the end of the day, you agree the cost is cheap. Well, fluoroelastomer, dude, this white band is still clean. And I'm not, like, shying away from it at work. Like, I'm down in there working with stain and oils, and I'm, you know, building these engraved wooden books and all this other crazy stuff. And I picked it up the other day because I had my first thing where the digital crown was getting a little bitey. And I was like, yo, I'm going to have to rinse this underwater as directed. And I'm looking at the band for, like, smudge marks that maybe I should clean while I'm cleaning it. It's flawless. Like, I've never owned a rubbery white band ever. But the fact that it's right flawless after this long is pretty amazing. And it doesn't smell like dank, which is another thing that's pretty amazing. So I'll accept the quote unquote, let's say $47 ripoff, because there's probably about 20 of that dollars went to making it this good. Well, after a while, then that falls off.
Now, hang on a minute, mate. You're not going to watch that one, because I've done years and years of research into silicone rubber, and it's not that hard.
But it's not just a looking rubber.
I think of that for a bit longer.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I love you, Ewan.
Never mind. Never mind. Now then, are you coming to the bash? Yes. If you want to get a ticket, now's the time, please. We've got 2 weeks to go. I could really do with batting down the numbers for the catering and that kind of stuff. You really, really do need to get your ticket organized. If you want to come for a curry, it is the best curry house in the world, and it has the best curry that you can ever possibly imagine eating. I do promise you that, and you will love it. It's £10 deposit for that. You will get that money back, though. It comes off your bill. That's just to reserve a seat so that Milan knows how many people we've got coming in. And then on the Saturday, it's the main bash event. So we've got the link down in Water Orton Hyde. It's got probably about a 400 square foot garden, 300 square foot inside the property as well. We've got Leanne, who's serving the food. I went and saw her this weekend. She's confirmed she brings the best fudge brownies you've ever eaten in your entire life. And all the beer and all the food that you need, all the soft drinks are going to be there. There's plenty of things for the kids to do and play around with and just lay out in the sun, have a bit of geek fun with a whole pile of other geeks, and maybe record a podcast or two and take the piss out of Will Green. How's that sound?
I gotta order my ticket now.
Do it. It's £20 for the bash ticket, but that gets you everything. There's nothing else to pay. The venue costs us £400 to hire, so that's without before we do the food and the beer and that kind of stuff. So all you're doing is buying your proportion of the hamper, if you like, the cost of the thing. And then on the Sunday, we're going to do a What I Know Day back at my place. I think we might do it at the studio, actually, where people can stand up and go, do you know what? Here's what I know. And I know Paul Wheatley's doing like a wireframing thing, and Wrighty's doing a thing on networking. I'm going to do something on photography, and because I'll have a fully working studio by that point as well, so we can do that. And if you want to bring your camera as well, we're doing the Mac show on the Friday. That studio will be set up for everyone to go and sit in and watch the show. And also Ian Lewis will be here with his camera, I think, and he's going to take some shots of people and that kind of stuff in the studio environment using all the flash stuff. So it'll be a load of fun. Come to here for about 2 o'clock on Friday the 3rd, and you can take part. And also Don McAllister will be here, and he will be clipping the ribbon on the front door, and the place will be officially open then at that point. So get yourself along. It's going to be a great weekend. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. I've ordered decent weather as well, and I've been assured that it's on the way. So do get your ticket, please. BritishTechNetwork.com, and there's a banner at the top. You can explain what it is. There's nice pictures there from Jufro Jim from last year of all the fun we had. And get yourself up, because it's great fun. Really, really good. Right. Was there any other stories this week in Apple? Because I don't recall that. I mean, the AT&T thing was an interesting one. We talked the other week, didn't we, about your grandfathered rights on the unlimited data, and we said, oh, you know, let it go. It's not really worth holding on to. But the FCC have fined AT&T $100 million for their practices. But I don't think it's going to change anything. AT&T aren't going to stop the throttling and aren't going to stop the negatives, are they?
Well, it depends on if they just get the fine or if they get forced to stop it as well, because I do have the paperwork over here that says that I will now be getting a check from AT&T, but by the time they go to the lawyers and everybody, I'll probably get like $40, but it's still worth it just to know that they got in trouble. But
are you getting really a cash check or credit on your bill?
You know, it depends on what FCC makes them do, but you know, the class action suits, that's normally how it works. You know, you get this thing and it says you don't have to do anything. You're automatically opted in. And I was definitely one of the complainants. But normally what happens is you end up with a check for like $30-$40.
Right.
If you're lucky. And then
if you're lucky,
we'll see. Like, you know, I'm just glad that they got in trouble for it so that maybe it will stop them from doing any more of the crazy stuff that they tend to do.
They say they're going to vigorously fight it because they think they're in the right. So I'm not sure they're learning the lesson here. And also, I think what they got dinged on was really not so much that they were throttling, but that they didn't disclose it properly. So I don't know if we're going to see any big changes, but you know, that problem may be going away too. I think the data issues seem to be getting better on the other carriers, and we still have at least some competition in the cellular market. So maybe that won't be as big an issue as it used to be.
I don't think the practice is going to change, though. I don't think they're still going to. I can't see them ever changing it. They'll take fine after fine, because $100 million probably doesn't cost them a great deal to worry about. And it's had toothful FCC as well, and they're relatively toothless in comparison to people like the EU. EU would have just taken $1 billion off them by now.
Do we need to have a moment of silence for the original iPad Mini that's been pulled from Apple, not selling that one anymore? I just saw a story about an hour or so ago.
So there are products dropping off then?
There we go. Well, you're talking the original, the iPad Mini One, right?
iPad now.
Mini One, yeah, the original Mini One with the push original button Mini. Rather than, yeah. I'm convinced every week, I'm more and more convinced that Apple listen to this podcast and react based on our opinions. I mean,
the right bigger there. Deal was the classic dropping off, I think, for a lot of people, the iPod Classic. Yeah. A lot of people are mourning the loss of that.
Well, it was a portable storage device more than anything, wasn't it? But I mean, that's even that's kind of gone now. You can get 128 gig.
It was the people who had, you know, a ton of music and really wanted it all local to take with them. You know, there isn't a solution for them right now, since there's not a 128 iPod Touch yet, right?
Spotify killed the classic.
Could it link into not selling anything that doesn't run the latest iOS? Is there anything else?
It was a Retina. It was the last non-Retina iOS device. So yeah.
I don't know if that actually ran. What I'm thinking is I've got the Mini 2, well, the first Retina Mini, and that runs iOS 9. But I'd have to go back and look at the documentation to see if the original iPad Mini actually ran iOS 9. I just suddenly had a thought, well, is it they're cutting off everything that doesn't run the latest version of iOS? I don't know.
There's nothing virtually that's dropped off, is there, on this iteration? If it ran 8, it runs 9. Nothing's right. Been taken off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I think that's the good news.
With El Capitan as well. If it runs Yosemite, it runs Capitan. So. Okay. Cool. Now then, did you know that MacFun have got a new plugin out? Yes, it's Tonality. It's effectively a very, very powerful black and white editing tool. So it'll take you your great images that you've shot, and you can put some fantastic black and white slants on them. There's you had Tonality before, which was great, but there's 7 new presets that have been added on to this for doing it. And there's also a pressure sensitive brush as well. So the harder you push with force touch support on your MacBook, it will change the way that the brush works as well, which is absolutely amazing. If you want to give it a go, try it for free. Go to macfun.com/Janati and give it a go. I've had a copy of them to have a play with, and I only had a very, very brief play, but it was absolutely brilliant. It was only released yesterday, so it was hot off the press on the big show last night. Go and check it out and give it a go. There is full support for Adobe Lightroom. I said last night that there's support for Photoshop, but I may be wrong on that. I've checked. I need to double check again. But it definitely is supported in Photos as well. So there's a plugin that will work with Photos and will help you do all your stuff in Photos. So check out macfun.com/Tonality. A lot of people that were listening last night went down and got the trial and had a go, and they said it was great in the chat room. They really enjoyed it. The other thing is there's some other great products that you can go and try. Noiseless, Snapseed, Snapheel, all of that kind of stuff. But the one that you might want to try is Focus. And Focus is an ability to take a standard shot that you've shot with your cheaper lens, perhaps, and get that really cool shallow depth of field effect that you get that pros use when they use their 2.8 lenses. It's really, really powerful, really, really good. Give it a try if you haven't already. Or I'll tell you what, how about MacFun give you a copy for free? Would you rather have that?
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, yay.
Well, I would, sure.
Here's the thing, MacFun are such a great company. We've chatted with Kevin down there, and he said, here's the thing, Ewan. What about we give every BTN listener a copy of Focus 2? Yeah, that'd work. So if you go to macfun.com/BTN and type in your name and your email, they will email you a download link and a code, and that code will give you a free copy of Focus 2. There's no such thing as a free lunch. That's it. That's the free lunch right there. Free copy of Focus 2. All yours to keep forever. Your code will work forever. And actually, Pete was telling me the other night, he ran it on his MacBook Pro and he ran it on his main Mac, and the code worked in both. So it's not just one machine. So there you go. You can put it across all
the
machines.
They're doing great stuff, MacFun.
They do some stunning stuff. I've had a play with Noiseless now as well, and I'm going to use it.
You doubted me on Noiseless.
I doubted Noiseless generally because I've heard loads of there's loads of programs that have always promised to reduce noise for me, and they kind of start and they're okay, but they end up a bit crap. And I used to know a little trick for doing noise that was in Photoshop 7, where you could blur the image, but then you drop out the color layer. And for some reason, I don't know why it did it, it would just get rid of all the red and blue dots, and it would work. It absolutely would work for nearly all of your noise stuff, but it doesn't work now. It washes the image out and makes it look horrible. So I don't know why it stopped working, but it stopped working about CS2.
Yeah. That's Noiseless has been amazing. Full disclosure, yeah. I know those guys because a lot of the folks that I work with at Nick ended up over there. And that's when they really started going after this photo market. So the reason this stuff is so good is they've got a lot of really good people. The people that Google didn't pull into the mothership when they purchased Nick software, a lot of them landed over at MacFun, and they're doing some amazing, great things with their photo plugins. And I like this idea that they've sort of split everything up into these little simple apps that sort of do one thing.
Yeah.
So you don't have to own everything. You know, you can kind of pick and choose the stuff that you need for the kinds of stuff that you shoot. And I think they've just done an excellent job. And
plugging into the Pro apps is a really good feature as well. Most definitely.
Yep.
CS2 was only a couple of days ago, says WinRider. No, it really wasn't.
They just released 2015.
Yeah.
Creative Cloud.
It really, really wasn't.
I'm not happy with it, though. I don't like what they've done with the exporting.
I've been just messing with it the other day, and I guess I'm mostly stuck in Illustrator the majority of the time, and After the Effects the other majority of the time, and just the speed upgrade alone in new CC is just amazing.
Yeah,
Pete in the chat room is defending himself. He said on 56 it was definitely yesterday.
I can relate. I'll tell you, for a lot of Photoshop work, I'm using Acorn more and more. I think it's
Acorn's great.
It's matured beautifully.
It does run very, very well. The other thing I would say, though, is if someone gives you something for free, it's polite to say thank you very much. So if you do download it and you do take advantage of this incredibly kind offer from MacFun, then I would insist, actually, pretty much, that you say thank you to them. So please send them a tweet at WeAreMacFun or on their Facebook page, or send them an email that just says, thanks very much for my free copy of the software. I got it through BTN, and that'll make me happy. But if you don't say thank you, then you're a rude, ignorant twat. So there you go. There's the incentive. Don't be a rude, ignorant twat, plain and simple. Right, it's time for the cool thing. Mr. Peterson, would you start us off? Link's in the chat room, boys.
Yeah, I've just put my link in the chat room. Yeah, so mine is a game that was released this week as part of E3. So this is Fallout Shelter. It's a free game on iOS only at the moment, but it is coming to the other platform that I won't mention. But I've gotten addicted to it over the last couple of days. It's kind of like Sim, you know. If you imagine like your Sim City type game, you're an overseer of this Fallout shelter. You can build, you know, different rooms like power generators and you know, cafeterias and stuff like that. And you basically get kind of like these dwellers that just turn up from the wasteland. You look at them in terms of what their skill sets are, and then you place them in different rooms. You can send them back to wasteland to do scavenger hunts. But the style of it, the graphics, are all in line. If you're a Fallout fan, you know, if you played the Fallout series on your consoles, I definitely recommend it. And there are in-app purchases, but not once do they throw it in your face. They don't throw it in your face at all.
Oh, really?
In this game. No, yeah. They don't. Basically, when you collect these things called caps, like bottle caps is what they are, and you get these little rewards, which are like these lunch boxes of different cards, so it'll be like bonuses and power-ups and stuff like that. But you just get those as you go through the game. You can buy additional ones if you want. But there's no, I haven't had one pop-up, and I've been playing it for like a week or so, that says, buy more, not like, you know, Angry Birds and stuff, which is an absolute pain in the backside when you play those sort of games, even if you paid for them. But this one is just not pushy at all.
Oh, that's good.
It's brilliant. Yeah, one thing I would say is, I did get a bit addicted to it when I downloaded it the first couple of days, and it is a bit of a battery hog if you leave it running in the background, but I just close the app now, and every now and again I'll just check in and see what my guys are up to. But it's a lot of fun. It does take a little while to get your head around it and figure out, you know, the way to play it. And like, I did kill off quite a lot of people. I did have a colony of about 20 people, and I managed to kill them all off, unfortunately. But I did learn a lot from that, and my new guys are all grateful for it.
Okay, that's great. You're not invited to the bash this year either, then, if you're going to kill us all off. Muller in the chat room says it's almost beer o'clock. I wish. Adam, what have you got for us, sir?
I'm trying not to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, okay.
I am going to pick something, and again, full disclosure, this is actually it's a product I've heard about for a long time and wanted to try out. These are going to be a new sponsor on the MacCast, but I get asked about this all the time, and I finally tried the product, and it is absolutely amazing. And it's a VPN product called Tunnel Bear. Has anybody used this? Because I get asked about, you know, all the time. I want to get access to Netflix in the U.S. Or I tried this out with BBC iPlayer. And it is amazing how simple it is. But what really blew me away, because something I'm always concerned about with these VPN things is the privacy. You know, I'm concerned, like, where's my stuff going through? What are people doing with it? Go in and check out their privacy policy. It is the most transparent, most open. Like, if you want to know before you try this out, you know, what's going on with it, what it's doing, what it's logging, what they're keeping track of, which is almost nothing. You know, it's the bare minimum of what they would need to run the service. It's all laid out there for you.
Bare minimum.
But then installing it was like, literally, you install it, puts a little menu item in there, you flip it on, you tell it what country you want to be going VPN from, and boom, you're done. I mean, it's incredible. So I have a friend who, you know, recently moved to Africa, who has been asking me, hey, I can't get any of my US TV. It's the one thing that's really killing me down here. Do you know of anything? And I think the pricing structure is reasonable for what you get for free. You can try it out for free, up to 500 megabytes of data every month. And then they have plans that go up from there.
$50 a year.
No, I'm kind of sold on it.
Yeah. So that's 35 quid. 35 quid for an entire year of TV from anywhere. Using your Netflix account.
You just want to use it for the cafe, the internet cafes, and make sure
you're surfing safer
that way. The 500 megs is not unreasonable for free. And if you tweet out something, I forget what, you have to tweet a message from them, and they'll give you an extra gigabyte of data a month for free. So,
I'm totally impressed if it's for you.
Is this on the Mac App Store? Can you get, is it five licensee type stuff, or is it one?
That I haven't not looked into. Like I said, they just became a new sponsor for me. So.
Yeah, I think,
and I'm not picking them because they're a sponsor, but it just happened to be the time that I tried it out. I've been hearing a lot of good things about them.
Most VPNs work in the App Store because of what they have to do. I think they just get kicked automatically out. But I got to say, it's pretty amazing at that price, because I'm currently at $100 a year for Cloak, which I love. But I definitely, it doesn't work as well in China, so I have to buy the one from the UK in order to get it to work in China. So I'm curious how these guys work in China.
Like three computers, up to three computers are
devices. That's just incredible value then. Incredible. Really good. I'm going to buy that. 50 cent pocket. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Adam.
Sorry.
And while we're on the subject of your money. VPS and VPN,
you'll be very happy. It was amazing. I flipped it on just on the free account, in because I went to BBC iPlayer. It said you're blocked. It's your country. Flip it on. Put UK, and boom, I was watching stuff in seconds. So
I think that's admissible in court. Actually, what you just said. while we're on the subject of internet stuff, if you want domains, if you want web servers, if you want VPS, VPN, if you want co-location servers, if you want dedicated servers, that kind of stuff, don't forget to check out UK2, britishtechnetwork.com/UK2. They are the people who keep us afloat in terms of bandwidth. We use a massive amount of bandwidth each week, and they pick it up no problem. And we've got unlimited storage on our server. Every show we've ever produced is on there. You can find it, you can watch it, go back as far as you like. I got a nice tweet this week that I thought was a bit of a dig to start with, because it was like, I don't suppose you do a podcast, wink. And it was just like, hang on, we only had 2 weeks off, you bastard. And he's like, no, I was asking, I don't suppose you do a podcast, do you? Well, yes, actually we do, so I apologize. That's a bit sensitive there. He said, I'm going to go back. And he started with Dr. Strangelove, I think, which was sort of 10 weeks ago odd, and started working his way forwards on the Mac show. So thank you very much for him. I apologize that I got the wrong end of the stick. But that's all down to UK2. They are absolutely brilliant. Check them out. And there's a lot of money off domains as well. If you go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors, you'll find all our offer codes there, and you get a vast amount. And also, the live show is brought to you by those fab people at 100tb.com. So, you switch off during the UK2 ad because you don't live in the UK. Doesn't matter. 100tb is a US firm. They're US-centered. And the server that we have does the live feed to everyone. Everybody here behind me can see a copy of themselves 2 seconds after the show happens. It's that good. And it's all done by 100tb.com. The server that we've got is the server that you'll buy from them. And they also distribute the content as well, so that it gets used very quickly and easily across the world. And also, they will split the load on servers. So they'll use UK2 servers here in the UK to help balance the load across the rest of the world, as well as $139 is the starter package. That's what we use, and it is more than enough to keep you guys fed with a brilliant, brilliant, super fast live feed. If you don't watch the live show, you should try and make time to come and do it. So it's well worth joining in the chat room and thurling abuse and getting told to shut up by me. So thank you, 100TB. It is superb of you. And don't forget, E3 as well will be covered on Monday in the Gamer Show. So check that out. All the roundup from all the stuff there. And Lee mentioned Battlefront last night, which did look pretty awesome, I have to say. I might be getting that, even though I don't play video games much anymore. Doc, your cool thing, please.
All right, so I popped it into the old chat room there. I have this addiction to headphones.
Yes, we had noticed.
And part of it is, I'll put it in that my family owned an audio store for 30 years, and I basically sold high-end speakers. My favorite brand is Bowers & Wilkins, straight out of the UK. They don't make good headphones, but anyway, I'm just always looking for a better way to listen to the stuff I like to listen to. I like, uncompressed music and a lot of podcasting, and it's hard to find a good set of phones that will cover the spoken audio as well as the music. And I got my hands on these at a really good clip, because they are discontinued by the manufacturer, so the price is like half of what they used to be. And these things are freaking amazing. For the smallest way that they did the driver, they basically changed the way a standard headphone driver is. It's a flat ribbon type thing, a la like an SE microphone, but in reverse, versus your standard issue little 6mm driver that you find in your average headphones. And these things are freaking awesome. They're super good. They're super clear. The sound quality is amazing. They don't fall out of your ear. And without being noise canceling, which is a little bit off-putting to people, they isolate really well. So they block the other stuff out. And it kind of gives you that same effect of noise canceling. So if I have these in and, you know, say someone of an opposite gender is trying to tell you something you probably don't want to hear, you can just play dumb because you actually can't hear them anyway. And it's pretty cool. So I would definitely say while they still last, pick up a pair of these XBA balance armature in earphones from Sony. And there's a couple different levels. I picked this one. There is some as low as 65, but I just like the way these sounded better. The one right under it at 65 is also still pretty good. But why are you smirking, Mr. Rankin?
No, because I was just thinking that you really are into them, because the rest of us glazed over it when you said I'm really
No. I'm always looking for a good pair of headphones. The question is, so anything in this XBA line is okay, or is it specific? Yes.
No, it's that balanced armature thing that they're doing. This one is four drivers. So again, the one just under it, I think it's an XBA 4 something, XBA 45, I want to call it, or 35. Those are just as amazing. And they're way, way cheaper, like somewhere in the $40 to $50 range. Yeah. But it has to do with that armature thing that they're doing. That's pretty crazy.
Mm. Booker in the chat room says he loves his old Sony earbuds, really good quality, but he's been running the cheap Amazon Fanny Wangs just of late. They were selling those in Costco here as well, the Fanny Wang stuff, but they weren't cheap. They were like £75. So, and I didn't think they were any better than the ones I had, so we'll see.
Adam, I'm going to find you the link to the other one in a second. In our show. Go ahead.
Excellent. Don't forget, if you'd like your BTN caricature, it's btncaricatures@gmail.com, and you will be up on the wall of shame. You also get all the other stuff that goes along with it, with a rotating banner that comes up with all the other banners that we've got going on the site, which is going to get way bigger now over the next couple of weeks because we've got so much more, so many more of the caricatures done of people. Check that out as well. And if you'd like to donate on Patreon, patreon.com/British Tech Network, anything it received would be greatly appreciated. BTN doesn't, the Patreon stuff hasn't paid for any of the studio. I've paid for all of that. So anything that helps out the network, we've paid an awful lot for the caricatures off Len in the last few months as well. So anything you can do to help us out, thank you very much. It's very much appreciated. And we don't drink it at the Bash, I promise. Right, Mr. Latournas, do you have a cool thing for us?
Absolutely, I do. I'm going to show you an iPhone case. Usually when I pick cases, they have specialized purposes. They're either underwater cases for scuba diving or very rugged camera cases, things like that. This is just a really good old daily driver case for an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, but I like it a lot for a few reasons. It's called the Glacier, and it's by a company called Inner Exile, and I put the link in the chat room, so you should be able to see it.
Yeah,
there.
I've got it.
It's a very, very thin case. Doesn't add a lot of heft or bulk to the iPhone 6, which I think is very, very important. You know, because of the styling of the case, you don't want something that's going to, it's big enough already, but it's nice and thin, and you don't want to kind of screw up that form factor. But the iPhone 6 is a little slippy, as Ewan likes to describe it. So I think it's a good idea to have a case on it. So this one's transparent, so it still lets your phone show through very nicely. I like the styling on it, like I said, unobtrusive. It's got this little lip on the edge that extends just past the screen, so that if you do set it face down, you're not going to be resting your screen directly on the desk or whatever you're putting it down. So it gives you a little bit of protection on that as well. The signature feature on this thing, though, is that it's what they call self-healing. So if you keep it in your pocket with your keys, where you get little scratches on it, the scratches actually go away. And there's a pretty neat YouTube video on the site that shows how that works. It's not going to remove every scratch. My son and I did some testing on it, and we were able to get some good gouges in here that didn't go away. But it's only those two gouges that are still here. Everything else that we did is just gone, and I'm not exactly sure of the mechanism on how it does the healing, but it usually does it within about 30 seconds. You can sort of watch the little scratch go away. They tested it with a brass brush, and you can see it on the YouTube video very clearly how the scratches just kind of disappear after a few seconds. So it's very nice. It also has this neat effect that my son likes a lot. If you turn your flashlight on with the case on it, it makes the edges of the case glow, which is pretty cool. I don't know if that's intentional or just a side effect of the manufacturing or what. And then finally, it comes with these extra buttons that will match whichever iPhone you have. So the space silver, space gray, or the gold, you can replace the buttons so that you're keeping in style with your phone.
Dear.
Very nice, about $25-$30 on Amazon, available now. Produced by this company, InterExile, out of Taiwan, who's just really, really committed to quality stuff. So I like it a lot.
That light-up feature could be handy for those people who like to use the visual ring feature, you know, where it flashes your flash when you get a notification or a ring.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm having trouble finding it because their website says it's like £90, which is crazy. Because
$90, it's not.
But I can't now find it.
I did have a direct link to. Actually, he gave me the link to the Amazon.co.uk.
And I can find them on 5 and 5S, but I can't find them off their website. On
Stick InterXL is one word, brother.
Okay,
take the space out. Amazon does that sometimes. Because I found the InterXL self-healing case.
Self-healing case for iPhone 6, £16. So that's right on the $25 mark.
Glacier. Yeah. They have one called the Odyssey, which is the one I think is the 91, and I think that's like metal or something like that.
Yeah. I'll have a play with that. I'll be out of pocket a bit later on today then. Bastards. Thanks, Chuck.
I'm going to pop the direct link to the Amazon UK store in the chat room as well.
Hey, Chuck, do you know the difference between the Hydra and the Glacier? Because they both say self-healing.
Yeah, they do. The Hydra, I think, is the older case. I think it came in colors. This one, the Glacier is very, very thin. I think it may be thinner than the Hydra. I'm not really sure.
Nice.
Oh, this is cool.
Go on, sorry, mate.
No, I said I needed a new case because my Apple One is starting to fall apart on the edges over there. And
I've got the red one. It looks disgusting though, and you can't clean it because it's leather.
The leather ones are falling apart for you guys?
They're just not clean.
Silicone.
They won't clean up. You get black on the edges and stuff, and that's it. Once you get a bit of dirt on them, because it's leather, it just won't buff out.
Oh, mine's black leather, so.
I did think about taking some shoe polish to it and seeing what would happen. Because if you take some shoe polish, it's gonna nourish the leather, but it shouldn't come off in your hand or anything. But
you can get the clear shoe polish too, so it won't.
Exactly, there you go. But I like that one. I like that Glacier one. It looks nice. The design can show through, which is pretty good. My cool thing is cable drop, and I've got to say, I did pick these about on the big show. I think about 8-10 months ago when I bought them, because I kept a couple of cables up with them. But these have really come into their own. I've bought another, I bought 27 of them this afternoon. These are absolutely brilliant. They are on Prime. Yeah, you're right. But you get them on Amazon. They're from Blue Lounge. And effectively, they're a little cup that just holds one cable, maybe two if they're thin. And they come with a sticky on the back. And I did look around on some of Amazon's sites, and there's some of the copy ones that are dirt cheap, but they say doesn't stick. So I know these stick, so I've stuck to the Blue Lounge ones. But Blue Lounge cable drop, and they're absolutely fantastic. So where we've got the light rig here, the light rig is transportable, so it'll be in here for most of the time, but then when we need to shoot video in the photographic studio in there, you can detach it from the ceiling and go and attach it to the ceiling in that room. But the cables hang in different positions and the doors gets in the way and that kind of stuff. And all I've done is tape a few of these on around the door frame, and I can just clip the cable in 10 seconds, and that's it. It's covered up, and it's the same in the corners of the room here. There's some in the corners on both sides that just hold the cable in against the wall and stop it swinging out and someone getting choked on it or something like that. Absolutely brilliant. Well worth the money. They're not cheap. You get 9 for £8, I think, in the UK store. So that's $12. But they're worth every penny, I think, because they actually work, and I have used up. I've probably got about 15 of these around at the moment. Like I said, I've got another 27 on the way today, so... Buy those. Blue Lounge.
Just added them to my cart.
Yeah, no, sorry, man. that really works.
Someone's talking.
Go ahead.
No, because I was looking for two. Mine only shows six in the box.
No, the ones I've got are nine today. I got nine in white. And the only thing that I'll say about the white is there was a couple of comments about these are awesome products, but they're not as white as the picture looks. That's obviously been photoshopped. They've got the touch off white, but they are silicone rubber, so it's not. You're never going to get a pure white out of that because they probably fall to pieces if you put the right fixer in.
But sorry, I was just going to say they have a new product out that I already put on my wish list. Like Blue Lounge is making some cool stuff anyway. Have you seen the Portico extension cord?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's basically an extension cord, you know, so you can plug it into the wall. It doesn't block the outlet. And then it gives you two additional outlets plus two USB outlets. So you would, you know, when you're at the coffee shop or whatever, you run that to your table rather than, you know, and then you can plug in two iDevices and two, you know, regular powered devices.
Oh, excellent.
It's like $25 US. It looks amazing. And it's been getting some good reviews. So
excellent. No, that's brilliant. They do make Cool Lounge makes some great stuff. And there's a bit of me feels that they're a touch overpriced because those are £1 a piece. So, and they're only silicone rubber with a sticky pad on the back. But they are very good quality. That's the only thing that
certain
makes me go.
Certain things
okay.
could be said about a certain other company we like too.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, fair enough. Move on from that.
You make good stuff. It deserves to make good money.
True. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Peterson?
My best place to get hold of me is on Twitter at LJP UK. I've got my my writing mainly about Apple stuff over at LJPUK.com, and obviously here on the British Tech Network.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And a guitar show will be coming soon.
Yes. Yeah, I'm working on it over the next couple of days.
New song in the office.
Yes, I need to have a think. Suggestions, please, if you've got any, to come over to me on Twitter.
Oh, okay. Anything by Sting is mine.
Okay.
There you go. Where are you, Adam?
You can find me at Maccast, maccast.com. Also, check out Maccast on Spotify if you get a chance. And then the iOS show at theiosshow.com.
Excellent, mate. Doc?
You can find me on the Twitterverse, the universe, wherever you want to call it, at DLCROCK. And, of course, here on BTN Network and on MacUser.pro.
That was a bit of a test. And last but by no means least, Mr. Latornis.
It's early for him.
Where are you, sir?
I'm at Macworld, macworld.com, the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, random access to M's, 2 C's, 2 S's.com, techversuswild.com, and at Chuck Latornis on Twitter. And I just wrote this week an article for Macworld about why it was Watch OS 2 that convinced me it was finally time to stop waiting and buy an Apple Watch. So I posted the link to that in the show, in the chat room.
Excellent, mate. Excellent. It's been interesting to watch the journos that have been saying why I've left the Apple Watch and I'm not doing it anymore against those that are now just buying one because they waited for everyone else to go on because they couldn't get one on day one. And I've got to say, I'm stuck with mine. I'm quite happy with it. And I wasn't a watch wearer before.
I do feel that some people went out of their way to make sure that they wouldn't like it.
Yeah, true. Yes, true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And within my article on Macworld, I linked to the New York Times article about the person who broke up with their Apple Watch.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is just the silliest thing in the world. So if you want something to make fun of, you can read that too.
My name is Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next Friday at 3 p.m. as normal to make up Mac news that isn't real. There you go. Have a great weekend and thanks for listening.